the Wanderers in all gold and black. You better retreat, cause we're on the attack. The strength of the wolf is the strength of the pack. We're Wolverhampton, we're on our way back.
Well, hello everybody, welcome to episode 338. It is 338. It is the ENS Wolves podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Judah, and at the other end of the microphone, someone who has been riding a camel in his spare time. He's also been to Qatar. Ba-boom-tsh. Please welcome Wolverhampton Wanderers reporter for the ENS, Mr. Liam Keane. Welcome back, baby.
That is disgusting. You're a disgrace.
Sorry,
HR will be involved.
I couldn't help myself. Rosie's going to be on the blower. She's calling me now.
Excuse me?
What? Speed dial, no, baby.
I'm not going there.
Well,
that's poor. It's poor, but I'll let you off.
It's a poor. I had a lot of jokes. That was one of them that was cleaner than others, to be honest. But we'll see how this podcast goes on. How is it, my friend? Are you a bronzed Adonis? Now you've come back from the 33, 34, 38 degree heat of Qatar. Did you have a good time?
I did. It's funny you say that. I hopped off the plane, came out of Birmingham Airport. Rosie was picking me up and she said, oh, you do look a little bit tanned. Oh. It was then followed up by, you know, for you.
Are you a bit Casper-ish?
I am a bit, which is fine. I don't mind.
Yeah.
When you see me, you'll be disappointed because I'm not really tanned. I might be the tiniest little bit, but hardly really. I mean, if I don't burn, I survive, put it that way. And I come back and I'm about the same as when I left. But it was great. You know, I've wanted to give it a go, experience, you know, something different.
Yeah, what was it like? What's Qatar? I've got no idea. What was it like? Is it a bit like Dubai, I guess? But or maybe
yeah.
Not?
Yeah, I've not been to Dubai, but a couple of the guys I was with had, and they said it's basically sort of Dubai sort of 20 years ago, where they're sort of trying to bring as much tourism as they can. It's quite cheap there. And there was a decent amount of tourists and stuff. It was good. I mean, I was a bloke. And
you
a tourist and straight, so basically I was trep pretty well. If you're not any of those things, then you might not get treated quite as nice.
Really? So, do you see a lot of that stuff? Did you?
You didn't see it, but because my friend was working out there, and
just a feeling.
Not really a feeling either, really. To be honest, all of it on the face of it is actually really quite nice. And I had a really good time. I would recommend it as a destination to go to, but having spoken to my friend who works there, who, by the way, loves it, he's happy to stay. He's got no issues at all. But there's definitely question marks over some of the, you know, the record.
Human rights issues.
Yeah, of a country like that. So I loved it and, you know, it was brilliant. But, I mean, I'm also aware that there's things that they were probably keeping from the tourists to make it a nice place, put it that way.
Well, I like to keep the peeps updated with what you were doing. Yeah, we got the camel picture. We got you sledging down in the... the Gobi Desert? I don't know what desert there is there. But look, to be honest, mate, that sledging looked quite, kind of fun. And
yeah,
also
it was
quite
good,
high.
Mate. Yeah, you know, it was steep. And I, you can't really tell in the video, but my hat flew off and all the sand came up into my face. And I'd put sun cream on about 10 minutes before that.
Oh,
so
no.
I was basically just like a sand monster walking around after that. It was just covered in it. Yeah, really good, mate. Really, really good. Weather was beautiful. Beach is amazing. I mean, seeing a few, you know, football people, if that's the right way to phrase it, Richard Keys and Andy Gray, they were doing a Be In Sports watch along down at Doha Beach Club. I happened to be there.
Right,
that was interesting.
Big names.
I mean, they did have Peter Schmeichel with them, which is quite a big name.
Yeah,
John
Richard Keys is just big.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wasn't as interested about getting, you know, like pictures with people, but a couple of my friends were, so I was being...
Oh,
you know,
no.
I was taking pictures for them. I didn't get in any of them, but it was...
No one go, is that Kian Lean?
Kian Lean. Tell you what, I had it in France. I've had it in other places. Unfortunately, it didn't happen in Qatar, but I was fine with that. Good luck. You know, I don't mind going under the radar.
No, yes, you do. You very much mind. Talking about going under the radar, I have a question to ask you, because obviously, you know, alcohol-wise out there and having a few drinks, I assume if it's like Dubai, you can't have a can on the street and have a bit of a wander around. It's got to be very... Sometimes it's quite hush-hush. I mean, I think Dubai is a little bit better now. Obviously, you can drink in the restaurants and the hotels, but apart from that, it's no mas. But what's it like in the old Qatar?
So it is, despite being a Muslim country, it is legal to drink there, but it's only in sort of very specific places. So you can't go into a restaurant and get a drink or anything like that. It's sort of hotel bars, rooftop bars, specific sort of businesses that have been, you know, licensed to do it in certain places around the city. But the beach club you could and things like that. So it's not sort of like really hidden away, but you've got to sort of also go out specifically to get it, you know what I mean? Actually, talking of football people, one of the rooftop bars we went to.
Oh, God, here we go.
Interesting little story. I can laugh about it now. At the time, I was not happy. So we go to this bar. It's got beautiful views of the skyline in this hotel. It's, yeah, brilliant. It's sort of almost a sort of decking kind of area. We go out there. We've got a table.
Did you send me a picture from there? You sent me a nice picture from a nice viewpoint. Was that the same place?
Or might have been, yeah. Okay. Was it one of me... Was it day or night in that picture that I sent you? Do you remember?
It was night. You were very drunken. I got a few messages after that as well. You probably don't remember sending.
I don't remember sending them, no. there was one night I got bad. I don't know if you can tell. My voice is a little bit hoarse and I'm not particularly well at the moment. So I've had a good week. No, this one, I don't think I did send you a picture, actually, but I do have one I can ping over to you. But, so we go up there, sort of like sort of decking area, and we're sat there having a couple of drinks. We got there, and it was happy hour, and we're like, oh, buzzing. It was still £8.50 a pint.
Is that bad?
That's bad.
Oh, is it?
I mean, it was cheap there, apart from alcohol, because of for obvious reasons. So, yeah. Anyway, we're having a couple of drinks. Sat around with my friend, sort of on these stool seats with a sort of rounded table. And we just sat there, and I've got my back to everyone else. I'm facing my friends and facing the skyline. And my mate goes, oh my word, Roberto Mancini just walked in. I turn around, it is Roberto Mancini. I'm like,
oh, nice.
I'm like, okay, that's quite cool. That's
pretty cool.
Because he's Saudi Arabia head coach, isn't he, the national team at the moment. So I don't know what he was doing over in Qatar, but he was there. You see him wandering around, trying to find a seat. He's with three or four of the guys. Turns out they were like backroom staff and some sort of technical director or something like that. They're wandering around, and then they come right over to us.
Yeah.
And they go to the table right next to us.
Okay.
But the table's so close to us that we had to move seats to like allow them to get in.
Okay.
So I stand up. My friend's there, Adam. He moves a seat for one of Roberto Mancini's mates, and a very broad Italian accent. He's saying, "Oh, thank you, thank you." Another mate to my right, Ross. He gets up. He's moving his chair along. The fourth and final friend of mine, Ashley, who was on the table, who is the one who lives in Doha, he doesn't get up. He sort of sat in a position where he doesn't really need to, but he's got his feet on a little bar that is going round the bottom, like a metal bar that's going round the bottom of the table.
Okay.
So as all three of us get up, he's got his feet on this thing. He must have moved or shuffled his weight or something, and the table starts rocking. The table rocks towards him. Rocks back towards me.
Oh no.
A full pint completely drenches me.
Oh no.
All down a new shirt that I was just feeling so confident and I was feeling myself in this new shirt.
Oh mate.
Goes all down me, smashes on the floor, shatters glass everywhere, drink everywhere.
Oh no.
I turn back and I look.
In front of Roberto?
In front of him. He might as well have been sat on my lap. He was that close.
Oh, no. How embarrassing.
I look up. Roberto Mancini's looking at me. And he's just shaking his head.
Oh.
He's just shaking his head. It's a slow head shake. He's just shaking his head. He's thinking.
Just typical Brits abroad.
He's like, these Brits on their travels.
Oh, pale.
Just goes
crusty.
Everywhere. It's all down all down my black jeans. I've got this sort of tan coloured shirt on. It's all on that. It's all on my shoes. I'm absolutely head to toe. And the drink was like a dark lager, so it's like a black coloured drink. All down me, covered.
No,
I turned back to my mates laughing, and I was close to throwing him off that balcony.
Oh, you were fuming. I can imagine now. You can snap like that. I mean, it must be the roids or whatever. I don't know what it is, but you were definitely, there's a bit of rage going on. I can imagine that you were furious. I mean,
the rage was ready.
And you're red. You're ready to go. You're psyched up. Did you go and get changed, or did you just carry on?
I said, well, I'm gonna have to go get an Uber back to your flat and go get changed. I can't go around like this. And they were like, no, you'll be all right. You'll be all right. The staff were coming over and helping us clean it and sweeping up the glass and everything. And Roberto Mancini's on his phone. And he just keeps looking over every now and then with one disapproving eye, looking over at us.
Oh, God. How embarrassing. Stay at the seat then?
Mate, we stayed as well. Oh. The staff got me a load of wipes and stuff, and I sort of wiped myself down. And luckily, because it was so warm, it sort of dried quite quickly and didn't really leave a big stain. It sort of left like a little bit of an outline stain on my shirt, but it wasn't like very visible. And then when it got dark, you couldn't see it at all. So I sort of ended up staying out and leaving it. But it took me a good half an hour to sort of calm down. My mate was like laughing at me. He didn't even apologise. And I was like, right, you're going to have to apologise. You have to say something because I'm going to go mental in a minute. And I was like, do you want this whole trip to come to an end right now? Because I'm going to lose it. I didn't actually say those words to him, but I was really annoyed. It was just everywhere. I'll never forget the look on Roberto Mancini's face when he looked at me. Mate. He looked at me and just thought, "You scumbag!
You absolute scumbag!"
It wasn't my fault.
And then you went, "Roberto, can I have a picture, please?"
Could you imagine?
Oh, God.
A couple of my mates were like, "Oh, shall we do it?" I said, "You can do it if you want, but I'm not doing it. I'm not going to be in the picture or anything."
There's very few people that I would ask to take a picture with.
We had this exact conversation, and
very few people in sport.
Who would yours be? You don't have to say all of them, but maybe a couple. Give me a couple names.
LeBron James.
That's a good one.
Tiger Woods.
Another good one.
Messi.
Yeah.
They're kind of like, you know, best of the best of the best, I think. Ronaldo, potentially.
Yeah.
But in terms of sporting people in the UK, not really that bothered, really.
To be honest, I'm completely the same.
I think it's because of our job, and we've been around, you know, celebrities and footballers and socialising and back and forth, but there's very few people who move the needle.
There'd be a couple of big UFC fighters that I'd be down for pictures with, things like that. And same for me, it'd be like a Messi or Ronaldo. My mate, actually, who lives in Doha, he met Ronaldinho at a beach club the other month. That would be one for me. I think if Ronaldinho was there, I'd be like, that's a good one.
Yeah.
He's also not linked to English football as well. So for me, it's sort of like it's a cool one because he's sort of far away kind of thing. Mm. But yeah, Roberto Mancini, I wasn't bothered. I mean, they actually didn't go and get a picture of him in the end. I'm glad they didn't, because it would have been embarrassing. But they didn't, and I'm glad they didn't. But had they, definitely not. But could you imagine, had I gone over there, just absolute piss sweat through with alcohol? Roberto, would you want a picture, lad? Oh, honestly, mate, it was so embarrassing. I mean, luckily,
Oasis sunglasses on.
Oh, mate, it was so bad. I managed to calm down and compose myself. I didn't actually say or do anything that I would have regretted, but I was so angry for about 20 minutes. We ended up having a really good night, and it was all good. But my God, I was so embarrassed.
Oh, what a story. That's a great story. Great. Well done, mate. That's a good story. It's very good.
Cheers, Roberto.
Very impressed. Cheers, Robbie. Right, should we get to some football 13 and a half minutes in?
Oh, go on then.
Go on then. Well, since you've been away, Liam, there's been a couple of games. I don't know if you've read about them or seen them or heard about them. Wolverhampton Wanderers. We've got to win, baby. We have got to win. It took the second game of the week to do that. We won't talk much about Bournemouth, but it wasn't great, especially in that first half. But look, it was not one that will live long in the memory. I know you're fully up to speed now. But what I would say going into that press conference on Friday, Liam, is that Gary O'Neill, regardless of the frustrations, and he did let his frustration show, I think, to the players, especially at half-time in that Bournemouth game, but he let us know as well that there's not too many times he's had to have stern words with his team this year. Bournemouth at half-time was definitely one of them. But regardless of the injuries, regardless of the situation that Wolves found themselves in, going to that Luton game, he was very confident of, one, injuries are not an excuse, and two, very confident the team that he was picking to set up that day would have won that game. And they did. And look, it should have been more. It wasn't. pretty even first 10-15 minutes. Maybe Luton slightly edged it, but after that, Wolves took control. Go up 2-0, and it should have been 3 or 4, really, but a host of mischances. And then, of course, Luton get a consolation, and it becomes a little bit squeaky bum time towards the end. But they got that. They got the 3 points. They look far better, and I think Gary Neil understands this now as a 5. It was a mistake to go to a 4, regardless of who was available on at Bournemouth. They got to a 5. Semedo, kind of that right centre-back role with Matt Doherty on the right-hand side. But they can change, and they were moving around, and it's fluid, and sometimes it's a 4 and sometimes it's a 5. But regardless, it looked a lot more solid. And, yeah, 11th in the table, Liam. And look, just thankfully, the first win in 8, they really needed that going into an important last 3 games and a very difficult last 3 games of the season.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look at, we spoke about it quite a few times, actually, when you look at burnout and teams that struggle towards the end of a season. The 21-22 season, we go back to it again. Bruno Lage, final seven games, of the campaign. Lose 5, draw 2. And that is the exact record Wolves have had over the 7 games going into Luton. Luckily for Wolves, there was 4 games remaining, including the Luton game, and they weren't the final 7, but it was the exact same situation where Wolves have gone for Europe and had a bit of a burnout. I think Gary has got a lot more excuses when it comes to injuries than Bruno did at the time, albeit he would have had his own reasons, I'm sure. And he needed just, especially with, you know, of those 4 games, Luton and Palace being the 2 home games, he needed something. And in these home games are the biggest opportunities, really, for Wolves. And going against the Luton side that, albeit have upset a lot of odds this season and probably, you know, exceeded expectations, are still pretty poor by Premier League standards. And mm-hmm. and Wolves had to go in there and get a win. And regardless of Wolves doing it the Wolves way, which is, you know, letting them away back into the game and making it worrying towards the end, they did go on and get the 3 points. And that just sets them up perfectly for what is going to be a tough but hopefully rewarding final 3 games. Now, Man City, obviously, always difficult, but I wouldn't write Wolves off by any means. Palace should be the one that they aim 3 points in. And then Liverpool, you know, the form they're in at the moment, you know, you never know what might happen despite it being Klopp's last game. So there's opportunities ahead of this Wolves side to just finish the season in a little bit of style, have a little bit of momentum going into next season with no pressure on them. European dream is over. You focus on building for next season and hopefully replicating a lot of the magnificent work that has been done this season and a lot of the success Wolves have had.
Yeah, I want to discuss 2 or 3 names to come out of these last few games and see what your opinion is, Liam, before we go on to a couple of other important subjects. First of all, Boubacar Traore, who had an excellent game against Luton, was my man of the match. I think a lot of the fans agreed as well. You saw the Arsenal game, which I thought he did very, very well in difficult circumstances. And it was a bit of a shock, actually, that he missed out against Bournemouth. And when he came on with Chiweira, I thought they really gave a little bit more impetus. They looked lively. And then, obviously, when he's placed back against Luton Town, look, he's raw, Liam. He is raw, and he does make mistakes. But this is starting to turn into a very useful end to the season for Boubacar Traore, where, you know, I could have seen at one point him not really being used this season. And then you've got question marks really going into the new campaign, not in terms of maybe his future, but where is he seen in this team? I think he's forced his way in. I fully expect him to keep his plays against Manchester City. And actually, that you want to finish strong, I think, in a season like this, especially with the plethora of centre midfielders they've got, with Tommy Doyle obviously, you know, going to be signed at the end of the season as well. You don't want to be the third wheel in that Doyle, Lamina, Gomez relationship. You want to really be in there. And I felt like he was the fourth and comfortably the fourth guy. And now he's back in amongst it a little bit.
Yeah, no, you are right. He was definitely comfortably the fourth guy. I remember Gary earlier in the season saying it's testament to Tommy Doyle that he's managed to throw himself so much into the mix that it's no longer a who do we choose or who's closest rather to breaking in ahead of João Gomes and Mario Lamina. It's now, who do I choose between these three players for two positions most of the time? And now it's Buba's position or time to make that step and hopefully throw himself into that mix as well. And you know, with the Arsenal and Luton performances, he's certainly starting to do that, if not got a lot closer already. He's a player that, in fact, the first thing to mention really is he's been quite unlucky this season. He's had sort of niggling injuries here and there, not stop start, not quite been able to get up to speed. And then when he has been available, he's gone away with Mali for the African Cup of Nations. Then just not really been able to break into the side. At the same time that sort of Tommy Doyle was getting a lot of opportunities, he was away with Mali. Then he came back and João Gomes and Mario Lemina were back around it, and there's just not been those opportunities for him. And then he gets a couple of opportunities, and we spoke about it in the last poddy as well. He takes it against Arsenal, and he had to take his next one. Obviously, he had to wait for the Luton game to do it. And he certainly did take it. Look, he's a player that he's got such evident qualities, and that is athleticism, his energy, his power. I think his intelligence when it comes to positioning and tackling, obviously, in possession-wise, I've thrown quite a few question marks up there, but there's certainly improvements to be made. There's a lot of really, really good qualities there, and that makes him such a different midfielder, someone that Wolves don't really have, albeit he might play similar positions to some other players. And yes, he needs to tighten up those areas, which I spoke about a lot in the last poddy, and I completely stand by everything I said. I think there's a lot of work to do in his in-possession stuff. But you can already see with Gary's coaching and the coaches that the Wolves have got, they're starting to get those small improvements with him. If you can even improve that by 50%, and you've got a player who is just a terrier in midfield at winning the ball back, he's already really, really useful. So I'm a big fan of him. And it's funny because I talk about him having that sort of difficult run and sort of stop-start, not being in and out of the team, or not really being in the team rather than in and out, and not really getting some momentum, is you could never really tell that from his face. I mean, he's such a sort of happy guy. I mean, obviously, I don't see him behind the scenes as much as his teammates, but from what I have seen and the people I've spoken to, he's, you know, really good around the dressing room, really good for the sort of club culture, not the kind of person to cause problems. And I'm sure he'll be absolutely delighted that he started against Luton, what was only his fifth Premier League start of the season. So there's a long way to go for him, but you can see at 22 years old the reasons why Wolves invested the money in him at the time, and I would like to think that it's an investment that's going to be fairly well thought of in probably another couple of years or so.
Yeah, you said winning the ball back there, and he was excellent at doing that. It wasn't just his passing, his distribution. You know, you're always going to get an energetic display from Traore. It was the fact that he won the ball back so many times, but also coming from behind. But the tackles that he made were really intelligent. And I think actually João Gomes can learn from that at times, because sometimes I think João Gomes is guilty of making tackles in bad situations that lead to bookings. And look, Traore sometimes is, we've called it before, haven't we? We've been watching him in different games, that he is a walking booking. But actually, there was an intelligence about his tackles, where he made them on the pitch, the angle, his body positioning, that actually meant that he wasn't, even if he gave away a foul, it was just a foul, it wasn't an automatic booking. But more often than not, he did win those 50-50s and sometimes 30-70s against. But such was the nature of, you know, the timing of his tackles. It was absolutely excellent and a thoroughly deserved man of the match display. And I thought he was very, very good in that one. Another one I wanted to mention, and I guess we can talk about the second goal, Mario Lemina, I thought had his best game for a while. Slightly, and you might disagree with this, Liam, slightly off the boil for me, Mario Lemina, in more recent times since he's come back into the side. That part of that, I guess, has been playing out of position. But when he's get back into the central midfield role, it was definitely the best of what I've seen Mario Lemina play for a long time. A superb assist for Totti Gomes. But it looked like it had been worked on the training ground. They all went to the bench and celebrated. But a really good display. And I thought, along with Traore, was probably Wolves' best player on the afternoon. So yeah, maybe just finish with that first, and then we'll go to one last player.
Yeah, no, I'm obviously a massive fan of Mario Lemina. For me, still my player of the season. But I completely agree. I really do. I think he's definitely been a little bit off it in the last, probably, would you go as far as a month and a half, maybe?
I think so, yeah.
Roughly 6 weeks or so. Coincide, obviously, with Wolves' dip in form. A lot of that, as you've already mentioned, him playing out of position, which I think is worth mentioning because it's going to have some sort of impact. But even when he has gone back into midfield, as you did say, not quite at his domineering best, but a brilliant player nonetheless, who's had an outstanding season. And to have him back at his best at Luton, at a game that Wolves need to win, is really, really important for him personally and for the team ending the season. Because if you've got Mario Lemina at your best going into this Man City game with Hwang, Acuna and all these other players available, Wolves got a great chance. So pleased that he's able to been able to do that, because I know he's quite an emotional guy, Mario Lemina. You know, he's very, you know, wears his heart on his sleeve, desperate to win, desperate to do well. So to have him back and doing what, even if it was a very small blip by his standards, having him back is it can be massively important for Wolves.
Yeah, and then the third person, it was the goal scorer, the second goal scorer, and obviously someone that you adore,
what a player,
and would, you know, cuddle your teddy bear at night time like it was Totti, cuddling up to you in your between your bed sheets, and that's Totti Gomez. And it was more of a shock than anything, because, you know, I kind of prayed him to the hilt on Saturday, and I didn't realise this, but maybe you did, Liam, but there's a little bit of frustration with Totti Gomez, or he's not universally admired, I think, as much as yourself. Well, maybe not as much as you. Maybe no one's as much as you.
Oh, come
but
on.
He's got a few critics, and I didn't realise that he had critics, really, and maybe that's my own oversight by me. But there were quite a few people in the timeline who were like, well, at least he's been better lately. He's had a shocker few games. And look, I know he's had a couple of dips in some games, but as have everybody. But if I'm looking at building this side, you know, £900,000 signing and Portuguese international, for me, he's one of the most dependable players in this Wolves squad. And I know he lost his place a little bit more recently, and Santi Bueno came in. But you know, if I'm looking at my starting 11 next season, it still is a back three, because I think Wolves play better in a back three depending on who they sign in the summer. Totti Gomez isn't even a question for me to be on that left-hand side of a three. So I don't know, it's just maybe more of a surprise to me that he did have his critics, or had his critics maybe more vociferously than I thought initially.
Yeah, he's always going to get some sort of criticism because he's going to have some sort of dips in form at some time during the season, and he has had the odd game here and there where he's not been at his best. And no offence to Totti or Wolves as a club, but if he was a 10 out of 10 every week midfielder, he'd be playing Champions League football. So there's going to be these dips occasionally. But what I do think is, and you use the word dependable there, which is absolutely spot on, is he's so consistent. He's reliable. You know what you're going to get from Totti Gomez. For me, he's as close to the sort of 7 out of 10 Johnny Castro-Otto. That's a different position, but Johnny Castro-Otto, dependability kind of player that we've had since Johnny departed the club, or was at his best when he was at the club. He's someone who, even when Wolves don't play well, normally does okay at the very least. And I think when he's at his best, he's so, so good. I mean, he's athletic, quick, really good positioning, good in the air. With the ball at his feet, I think he can definitely make some improvements, but I think he has got better over the last year or so with that. And I think there's just, as an all-round defender, whether it's in a 4 or 5, I think he's one of the best below the sort of traditional top six. I really do. I think he's that good. And you talk about the business there. I mean, yeah, it was about 900,000 to a million, wasn't it, they signed him for. Mm-hmm. Now he's a Portuguese international. I'd be gobsmacked if he doesn't go to the Euros with, I know for a fact that Roberto Martinez likes him a lot, and also obviously he's given him his debut and played him recently. I'd be very surprised if he doesn't go there and all of a sudden he's easily a £25 million defender. I think he's really, really good. And I'm pleased that he got... It was his first goal of the season. That's right, isn't it, I believe? I'm just so pleased that he's gone, because he's a... For me, going into next season, as you mentioned, whether it's a 4, whether it's a 5, he starts every game. I think he's that good.
Yeah, really, really strong. And I think you're right in that valuation, honestly. I think that's only going to go up. So,
and he's still only 25, I believe, as well. I mean, he's still got, you know, some improvement to make. I think it's a brilliant business for Wolves. I'm so glad he's been able to make that leap, because, let's be honest, he was totally disrespected by Bruno Lage in the season. Mm-hmm. He got sacked because he started away at West Ham in Bruno Lage's last game of the season, or last game before being sacked, sorry. He started a back three of Max Kilman, Johnny and Ruben Neves, and left Totti on the bench. That says everything you need to know. I mean, that was an outrageous decision.
Yeah, and one that, like you say, got him... one of the many decisions got him the boot in the end, which is a shame, really, because, you know, let's be honest, the Totti Gomez was recalled under Bruno Lage, so, you know, it's a shame, really, because he'd done so well that that was just such a bizarre decision, and I guess one of many, and it was the final straw, I guess, for Fosun. Times have got better, though. We've got a decent guy in charge at this moment in time, and hopefully the infrastructure is looking rosy. Now, talking about infrastructure, talking about the situation we've had over the summer, and we talked about the dreaded three-letter words, not VAR, but PSR. There's been some changes, Liam. There have been some meetings. Premier League clubs have voted in principle for plans to introduce a spending cap from the 2025-2026 season. So that's not next season, that's the season after next. The rules, should they be approved in a final vote later this year, will replace the current profit and sustainability rules, PSR, which have caused controversy in the Premier League this season. Of course, Everton deducted points, Nottingham Forest deducted points, appeals waiting to be heard. It's obviously something that Wolves have, and we followed very, very closely due to the restrictions that they've had to use this season. And, you know, there's been a lot of restrictions there, hasn't it? And you report it over the summer, we report it throughout this January, and, you know, Wolves are okay, just about, they're okay, but they've got there. What do these changes mean for Wolves, Liam, going forward, not just in the short term, but also the long term? Are they good? Are they bad? Are they indifferent? And when are we expected to see these come into play?
Yes. So there's quite a lot of info here. The first thing I'll say is that, you know, neither me or Mr. Nathan Judah are financial experts. We do a lot of work to try and, you know, get our heads around what's happening, speak to the experts like we did last summer as well. So any supporters that might not quite grasp it from this explanation from me, drop me an email, a tweet, whatever. I'll try and, you know, get back to people, because it does take time for people who aren't experts, me included, to get your head around it and figure out where clubs are at. So for this sort of new model going forward, the recent changes is for something called, it's a cap basically, but something called anchoring to the a multiple of the bottom club's income from the Premier League prize money and TV revenue. But it's something that's slightly separate to something we actually spoke about a few months back. And this was about mid-March. We were talking about the UEFA squad cost ratio rules that are hoped to have to come into place. And that is still the case. So essentially, there's going to be almost sort of two sets of rules within the same rule, if that makes sense. And I'll explain why they sort of differ and how they would affect Wolves. So the squad cost ratio rules, which was about mid-March, we were talking about this. The plan is that a vote for all of this stuff is going to take place in June at the annual general meeting there at the Premier League. And then if it does go through and is ratified, it will be coming in for the 25-26 seasons. That won't be next season, it'll be the season after. And we'll go from there. So let me explain. The squad cost ratio rules is basically that a club can spend a certain percentage of the revenue that they bring in. So that would be transfer fees, wages, agent fees, things like that would all go into the amount you can spend on all those things, rather, would be a percentage of the revenue that a club brings in. So Wolves currently, in the last financial year, brought in £168.6 million. The projected rules going forward would be that they could spend 85% of that 168 million on those things, transfers, wages, agent fees, etc. At the moment, for clubs that are in European competitions, for UEFA, by the time you get to this 25-26 season, their percentage will be 70%. So clubs in Europe can actually spend less percentage of their revenue than clubs not in Europe. But the argument for that is that clubs in Europe will have more revenue anyway, being in the competition, so they're hoping it might even itself out. A small side note is that the way UEFA have done it is that it was actually 90% this season, it's going down to 80% next season, and then the following season, 25-26, it's going down to that 70% I've just mentioned. As it stands at the moment, the Premier League for this 25-26 season is going to be at 85%. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit uncertain at the moment whether that's going to drop down to 70 like UEFA have done, or whether they're going to keep it at 85. So just to put that out there, to keep an eye on it, and something we'll sort of update on if it does change. But as it stands, it will be 85% of the revenue that clubs can spend on. So let me explain this anchoring side of things, which, and I'll start off by saying this, will not in the slightest affect Wolves at all. It is something that will put a cap on the biggest clubs and with the biggest revenues and their spending. But I'll explain why. So let me give you an example. Example for example, if Man United generated £1 billion in revenue, which I don't know their exact figures, but I don't think it's actually too far off that. But let's say it's a nice round number. It's £1 billion of revenue. Because they're going to be in European competitions, they have to go by the 70% UEFA squad cost ratio, not the Premier League's 85%. They've got to go by the 70%, mm-hmm. which means they can spend £700 million on wages, transfer fees, agent fees, etc. But the anchoring cap within the Premier League's rules would mean that they can spend whatever the multiple is of the bottom club. So an example of that would be Southampton last season. It was around about 100 million. The multiple that they're throwing around at the moment, obviously this all needs to be signed off, but the multiple they're throwing around is five times that, which would make it 500 million. So by the 70% rule, Man United could spend 700 million, but the cap in the Premier League would mean they could only spend 500 million mm-hmm. and it would be brought down. So it's not doing anything to help clubs like Wolves, these new anchoring rules. It's not helping anything like for clubs like Wolves to actually spend more, but it is stopping the clubs at the very top from expending even more and sort of capping what they can do. And that's currently where they're at, which is no surprise why Man United, Man City and surprisingly Villa all voted against this the other day when this was discussed. Yesterday, I believe it was, wasn't it? And Chelsea abstained, bizarrely enough. But obviously, it's still got to go to the vote in June to sort of be signed off and go through. But that's currently where they're at. So the big change for Wolves is that you're no longer, and this is obviously for a lot of clubs, is they're no longer, if these rules go through, they're no longer working towards the cumulative losses over 3 years, three-year rolling period of PSR, which is £105 million of losses. They're now having to make a massive focus on revenue. So they need to make sure that they're within that 85%, first of all, so they don't breach the rules. But secondly, the club now are going to want to do everything in their power to generate as much revenue as they can to give them more spending power going forward. And obviously, naturally, you would hope the club will build up from this 168 million, but it's going to take them a long time to get anywhere near the sort of Man United numbers, for example. So, right. so that's sort of where they're at. And it's interesting as well to note that last financial year, had these rules been in place and it wasn't PSR, obviously that wasn't the case. But if it was and these rules were in place, Wolves would have spent just over 90% of their revenue, which means they would have breached the rules.
It's been over, yeah.
So they would have been in trouble with these new rules. But that was a very sort of specific year where Wolves had let Briolage go and had to pay him off and his staff. They brought Lopetegui in, he was on massive wages for a manager. They had big expenditure on players, brought loads of players in, especially in the January. Mm-hmm. They then had loads of players on big wages like Semedo and Sarabia and loads of others. Yeah. So Wolves expect to be able to bring that down pretty easily if they're not already within that because of some of the people that have moved on since. But an interesting side note. So in terms of the revenue, yeah, they're going to have to focus on bringing that revenue up because 168 million, as much as sounds like a lovely figure to me and you, and it's certainly not the lowest in the Premier League by any means, it's absolutely not a massive number in comparison to a lot of other clubs. And for Wolves, that means prize money. So that is where they finish in the Premier League. Every single position in the Premier League is going to be really, really important for clubs now, especially clubs like Wolves. TV revenue, massively important. Commercial, sponsorship, all these kind of things. Ticket sales, they've never been a massive part of the revenue because of sort of just how the numbers work, but they're still going to be important to bring in money in. And Wolves' focus now, if provided these new rules go through, is going to be turning towards bringing as much money in as possible to allow them to spend as much as possible.
I mean, it seems to me a little bit more, I know it's obviously a lot to deal with and you probably have to listen to it a couple of times, but it seems a little bit more, well, less complicated than what PSR was.
I agree.
And probably easier to get our head around from listening. Thanks for that, Liam. It's a really good explanation. I guess if you're a Man United or a Manchester City and you're opposing it, it's because I guess they see if I'm getting £1 billion in through all the sponsorships and commercial deals, etc., then why can't we spend that? You know, why are we getting capped? So I guess that's their frustration. But I completely understand it. I completely get it. Hopefully it will help. I still think it, you know, it's not going to stop the domination and the money that's spent, I think, but it will go some way to, like you say, hence why the cap is, to capping it a little bit. be interesting to see how it goes. What I would say, Liam...
Just on that cap, just to quickly give you a figure for context, mm-hmm. because I was just trying to remember what this figure was. Yeah. Just quickly found it. So obviously Wolves' revenue for the last financial year was 168.6 million. Mm-hmm. Manchester United, in March for the previous quarter, recorded a quarterly revenue of 225.8 million. That's just a quarterly revenue, and it already dwarfs Wolves' yearly revenue. So
sure.
Man United, they are sort of roughly around that billion figure that I've given. I would imagine, obviously I'm not sort of in depth with United's figures, but I imagine based on that, they're roughly around that billion that I was talking about. Hence why they are one of the clubs to vote against having this cap. But as it stands, if all goes well in June, it will be coming in.
And I guess there's going to be a lot of meetings and there's going to be a lot of scurrying about. I know it's not next season, it comes in the year after, so they've got a little bit of time. But how do Wolves bring in more commercial money? How do they bring in more sponsorship? Because that's going to, as you say, be huge in what Wolves can and can't spend going forward. It's a difficult one, and probably one we'll have to address, I think, later on, maybe further down the summer, because you've got to have the infrastructure, you've got to have the facilities to be able to do that, Liam. And let's be honest, and we haven't really addressed this, but again, I think during the summer, when we come into a couple of podcasts, we can have maybe one dedicated to this, is the state of Molineux at the moment needs a lot of work outside the ground, inside the ground. There's a lot of repairs that have not been sorted out. When you've got sponsors, when you've got commercial money coming in, they want a good product, a top draw product, so that they can showcase their brands. At this moment in time, yes, things have improved, but there needs to be a lot of work built and spent on that stadium. And that's one of the things that have kind of fallen by the wayside because they've used the money elsewhere. But I wonder if there's going to be an interesting standoff point of view at some stage where you've got to speculate to accumulate. And that might mean stopping things, you know, this self-sufficiency that we talk about. But in order to update the stadium a little bit better, to improve those facilities so that the sponsorship and the commercial activity can come back.
Yeah, it's a really important point. They've got to try and find this balance now of pushing the team on, but also doing this. I, as far as I'm aware, the last time I spoke to people about it, it's still not anywhere near the sort of top of the priority list. But it'd be interesting to see how that may or may not change, especially with the focus now no longer being on sort of containing these losses over a 3-year period to now being, let's stay within the revenue percentage, obviously, but mm-hmm. bring as much revenue in as you can because it means you can spend more. That's the way it works. Yeah, be interesting to see how we'll sort of adapt to that with the stadium in mind, because you're right, it does need a lick of paint here or there and a few other things if I'm not being too kind. Yeah, completely spot on.
And look, you know, I know you said ticket prices don't really come into it, but they do come into it for the fans, and the fans are the most important thing. Gary Neil said to us after, well, throughout the season, but especially recently, the most pleasurable aspect of him taking over the season has been the fans and how incredible they've been. You can't piss them off. And if you're going to keep on raising prices, no matter how small or how big or whatever, inside a stadium that's substandard in a lot of areas, then you're going to have a problem. And, you know, you've got to keep the fans happy, most importantly. And hopefully they do that. And hopefully they do address the situation, the issues. But it will be very interesting going forward, and hopefully these changes, like you say, will be for the greater good. It just might take Wolves a few years, not just starting 2025, 2026, for them to take advantage of improved revenue and improved, you know, ability to spend money. I think this isn't going to happen overnight, is it?
No, it's going to be the same for a lot of clubs, and you've got to try and, you know, adapt to these new rules if and when they do come in, because of you know, I mean, look at us, for example. Last summer, trying to find out all this information and find out where Wolves are at and get your head around it. And I understand there's experts that work on this, but there's a lot of people that go into how a football club works, and all of a sudden you're changing how the system works. It's going to be a fairly big change, albeit the anchoring thing isn't going to make a big change for Wolves. It won't change them at all, in fact. But it'll be interesting to see how Wolves adapt it and how they adapt their approach. Going into this summer and sort of next season, it's unlikely to make too big of an impact with the rules potentially coming in for 25-26, but they're going to have to start getting their ducks in a row, and I'm sure, you know, there'll be a lot of people working on it. A lot of people pay big money to work on it and get it right, because it's you know, there's a lot of things at stake to make it happen.
Yeah, and of course squad and incomings and outcomings will make a big difference to that. And we've got a show coming up, actually, a Keane and Judah show this Monday, Liam, that's going to be about four of the top transfer targets of the summer, four saleable assets that Wolves have. I'm not going to mention them because you can watch that show for free on Monday, Shots TV, channel Freeview, channel 276, 10 p.m, or of course online. Just click the link and you've got 25 minutes of me and Keno talking about some potentially big moves in the summer. Two moves that I want to talk about, not balancing the books as such, but I'm going to label this section SAS. And, you know, there's some big names who you can kind of imagine that we're going to be talking about who could generate big fees this summer. Two players who won't generate huge fees, but could you see on the move SAS, Sarabia and Semedo? Look, they've got a decision to make, haven't they, with Nelson Semedo. With Pablo Sarabia, he's got 1 year left, both on huge wages. And look, the squad is small as it is. Pablo Sarabia lost his place on Saturday, and I think quite rightly so. I think he's been off the boil for quite a long time, and actually I've been disappointed by him from a seniority point of view, especially when he's been playing so well, but with other big players, whether that be Huang, Neto, Cunha at that time, that did help him and maybe gave him some space when he was needed. When you had a couple of youngsters, I don't think he stepped up. He's lost his place now. Could you see one or both being potentially sold in the summer or moving on in the summer to not just release, you know, or generate a little bit of revenue, and it won't be massive, but also to take off that huge wage bill, because both those players are amongst the two of the top three or four biggest earners at the club?
Yeah, I think the first thing to say on that would be never say never, because they both had, well, Semedo's had a very good season. Sarabia has been decent enough overall, I think good and bad, but, you know, done well. And Gary Neal won't want to lose either of them, I could imagine, particularly now since Semedo. But there's a lot of reasons for both players, let alone just one of them, but there's a lot of reason for both players to move on. And that is a lot of it from a club point of view, but also from the player point of view. So I think that, you know, if Wolves, and you are right when it comes to the transfer fee, it's not going to be huge for either of them. I mean, how old are they now? Nelson Semedo, is he 30? Is that right?
Let me just double check. Just bear with me.
And I think I'm thinking of Sarabia as well. I think he's 32. Yeah, Semedo's 30.
He's 30, yeah.
Yeah, and then Sarabia, I believe, is he 32, 31? It's great, great. Yeah,
Sarabia's 31 years old.
There you go.
But he turns 32 in 10 days, 11 days.
There you go. So 30 and 32, basically. So they're at a sort of fairly similar-ish position. Both got a year left on their contract, as you say, both on massive wages at Wolves. And I think if Wolves were to get a decent enough fee, and I completely agree with you, it wouldn't be absolutely huge, despite them being sort of international players and played at good clubs and done well at Wolves. I don't think it'd be massive money, but if they were to get a decent enough offer, it would be silly to suggest that the club wouldn't be open to it, absolutely. If they were to depart, it would knock huge numbers off their wages, their average wage bill, and allow them to do some more work, particularly on the wage front, you know, even if it's signing other new contracts with the players or free transfers or even new signings that come in, just having enough wage budget to sort of, you know, make those signings, you know, available and make them happen. So that's going to make a massive impact. You've got to bear in mind from the player point of view as well, as I say, both on a year left their contract, at the ages they're at, they could probably both go and get, and particularly Semedo, I would say, but they could probably both go and get
a three-year deal for Semedo.
Semedo at a club that's going to give them good money, maybe even more money than what they want at Wolves. Basically, a sort of, you know, last big move kind of scenario, particularly for Semedo, as you said. And if that was the right move, I think all parties would be open to it for both players. But I think probably more in Semedo's case in terms of one last big move. So look, they might sign. It's not definitely not out of the question that they sign an extension and stay at Wolves, because Wolves value them both players. Gary O'Neill likes them, particularly against Semedo, as I say. But I think from a business point of view, probably for club and player, it makes a lot of sense for both of them to go. And that's why there's a lot of talk and a lot of rumours already about both of those players moving on. And it wouldn't shock me in the slightest if those two are, you know, two of the first out the door.
And Nelson Semedo's agent, someone we know pretty well, right?
He is, yes. So I can imagine that there'll be a lot of clubs already having their voicemails and emails topped up.
Look, it's an interesting one. And look, I get you play devil's advocate as well. Nelson Semedo has had a fantastic season, and there'll be a lot of people screaming at their radio, wherever they're listening to, their headphones, and just saying, look, you guys hate Nelson Semedo. That's not the case. Nelson Semedo's had a fantastic season. We praised him to the hilt. He's been very, very good. He's been very reliable. Should he score more? I think he should score more, or at least get into better positions. However, I think defensively he's had probably one of the best, if not the best season, I think, of his Wolves career. Fair play to Nelson Semedo. But if they do sell him, then you've got to look at, you know, we've been just talking about all these new rules and stuff. If you're going to sell him, you've got to replace him. And that's something that they did, or loan them out and didn't replace in January. That's not going to be the case in the summer. They have to get players, and it's imperative they do. But the money that you will save on those wages, I mean, you're looking at, you know, millions of pounds a month. You know, if you combine them, which is astonishing, you know, 1 million plus a month in saved wages. So, you know, you're going to go into a scenario where you can sign X, Y, and Z. It might not be on massive money, but, you know, you can pay elevated wages that's nowhere near what these guys are getting paid. So you've got to look at everything. And I promise you that Matt Hobbs, that Jeff Shee, that Gary O'Neill will know the intrinsic value of every single player and what they can and can't do this summer. I'm sure negotiations, and I'm sure they've already made the mind up about quite a few people, hence why some of these stories are starting to come out in the media. So it's definitely one to watch this space over the summer.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. You've wrapped that one up pretty nicely.
Righty, baby. Shall we go and take some questions from the beautiful people?
And they are beautiful. Bring it on.
Oh, they're gorgeous. Well, actually, I haven't seen some of the faces. They live behind emojis, some of them. But the people who send questions in are very, very nice. Other people, not so much. But it's all good. It's all good. We promote love. We don't promote hate on the show. It's all good. Reggie says, well, he says, choose one player from the relegated and potentially relegated teams of Sheffield, Burnley, Luton and Forest that you would like to see at Wolves and why. I'll shorten this because we haven't got forever. You choose one from one club. You can choose Sheffield, Burnley, Luton or Forest. Who would you like from said club and why?
Now, there's definitely a few player I can mention, but straight away, name that just pops into my head. We've spoken about it on the potty before. Elijah Adebayo at Luton. I think he'd be a brilliant signing.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm gonna say that. I'm gonna agree with you. Let's move on. John, we've kind of answered that question just a little bit. Paul says, "What do you think, or who do you think will join Sheffield United in being relegated, and who's coming up in the playoffs?"
I think it'll be the obviously Sheffield United already gone, but the other two in the bottom three. I think it will be the three promoted clubs that go.
There's talk of Forest getting a reduction on their points as well from 4 to 2. I mean, it's just the rules are a disgrace. I mean, what's the point? Like, it's pathetic. I mean, it's pathetic that it's happened, but the fact that you can get change. I mean, you might as well appeal anything because you know whatever it's going to be, you might as well just take half off it. It's like, well, it's not going to be 6, it'll be 3. It's not going to be 10, it'll be 6. It's not going to be 4, it'll be 2. It's ridiculous. And it's playing with other people. I mean, the league, the situation, I mean, Wolves haven't been in this battle for a long time, but if you're Luton Town, if you're Burnley, I mean, what a shocking season to be a part of. It really needs sorting out. Pretty embarrassing, really. I don't think you should be able to appeal it, to be honest, but whatever. I think that those 2 points will actually keep Nottingham Forest up. I agree. I think the bottom three goes down. Who's going to be in the playoffs? Well, I'll tell you what, West Brom are doing their very best to miss out on the playoffs. goodness me. 3-0 defeat against Sheffield Wednesday. I think I did a poll a couple of weeks ago. Would you like West Brom to come up? How many people? It was about 80% said no, 20% said yes for the Black Country Derby to return. What would you say, Liam? Would you want West Brom to go up or not?
I mean, it'd be good to beat them again, but I think I have to say no. You know, leave Wolves above. You know what I mean? Just look, Wolves are up there looking down, laughing at the championship. That's fine with me.
I think it's going to be interesting to see who misses out. Whether it's going to be, I think if Ipswich missed out on top two, I feel like Ipswich would be my ones to come up. I think out of those four, if they didn't, I don't like Leeds. I think they're on the down low. I actually feel that maybe slightly unpopular pick, but I think that Norwich City might go up into the Premier League and back up.
Oh God, I hope not.
Don't want that, do you?
I don't want
Ipswich
and
Norwich.
Tell
you what, you don't
Norwich
want Ipswich and Norwich. My God, A15.
Two long trips over on the A15 in a season. One is more than enough for a season, let alone two.
Can you imagine?
God, I don't think there's any clubs...
they're playing the best football at this moment in time.
Well, yeah. I don't think there's any clubs, obviously, automatically or playoffs that I have them into their stadiums either. And I quite like a new stadium, but I think all of them I've been to that are going to make the playoffs. So that's a bit boring, isn't it?
You've been to Hull, if they nicked in there?
I haven't, actually. So Hull could...
KC, come stay at Shea Judah.
Hull could be the one for me. I couldn't mean anyone.
Hull night out, mate. Hull night out is definitely different to a Qatar night out. There's no Mancini's there. There's a Mackey's. There's no Mancini's.
Oh, to be fair, that's probably more of my street, to be fair. I'll take that.
Right, okay. Let's have Luke. Vicky Lawson says, if I'm not too late, a really important football question. When is João Gomes' wife due to give birth, please? can you ask her?
Yeah, no, funny enough, I don't have a direct line through to her, but next time I see João, I'll ask him and see what he says.
Gail says, does Boubacar Traore deserve his place in the starting 11 from now on? I personally think he does.
So I don't mean this as a disrespect, but there is always, and this is football, and sometimes I'm guilty of it. I've said it on here before. I do it probably more than I'd like to admit, but recency bias is definitely a thing. Mm-hmm. We have to remember how good Tommy Doyle has been for Wolves this season and how good he's been recently as well. So does he deserve to start every game between now and the end of the season? I know there's only three games left, but does he deserve to start every game? Probably not. Depends how he performs in the next game, because in my opinion, he probably does deserve the next game, whether he gets chosen or not is another question. And obviously, you've got to bear in mind that Tommy Doyle can't play against City either. So that gives you a bigger opportunity for Traore to play. But does he automatically walk into the starting 11 now? I still think he's a way off that. I think he's a very specialist midfielder that is very good at what he does. And when he performs like he has done against Luton, he's brilliant. But there's work to do there. I think he's a good player who... he's still very raw. So give him a bit of time. But obviously praise him when he does well. I mean, he was brilliant. So you have to give him the credit where it's due. But at the same time, don't disrespect João Gomes and Mario Lemina, who've been absolutely outstanding this season. Tommy Doyle, who has been probably the signing of the season for Wolves. So yeah, I think Wolves have got a very competitive midfield department.
Yeah. James Mearns, does it annoy you when people get panicked by your tweets like the Gary O'Neill one last Wednesday? Yeah, I put a tweet out in the press comments. You know, sometimes, James, and people realise this as well, when you're putting tweets out, first of all, you only got a certain amount of characters. Second of all, you know, sometimes people look at the tweets, a bit like a text message sometimes, isn't it, at home, and you can give different interpretations, like, Mrs. says, what are you doing? I instantly get panicked, even though I'm not doing anything wrong. But, you know, you could read it which way you want. I mean, normally I should be panicked, to be honest. But it's you got a fair point. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, look, it is what it is, isn't it? I think I did one the other week about Morgan Gibbs-White saying, don't know what the problem is people have with Morgan Gibbs-White. And there's a load of people saying, what are you talking about, you idiot? And I'm like, well, no, I'm just trying to be sarcastic. I thought that was... self-explanatory, and sometimes maybe it's not, maybe there's a bit of context there, but I think people know me from the last 10 years that I've been here, or it'd be 10 years in January, so they kind of realised, and the way we've talked about certain players and certain things. So yeah, the people got a bit panicked with the Gary O'Neill quote, talking about people have walked out on this club and it just shows where we were this summer, and they instantly thought that he was going to do exactly the same, and really was just using it as an analogy about the process that they've done and where they've got to this season. And sometimes, like I say, I could write a 3-5 worded tweet, but you've just got to get press comments tweets out, whether it's pre or post, as much as possible. And, you know, if people need a little bit of context, and I'm sure, like I did, I can add it to them later on when I sit down at like 11 or midnight or 1 a.m. and I realise that six people are going, oh, he's leaving. So I'm sure you get that sometimes as well, Liam, when you put a couple of, you know, news bulletins out there and you just don't look at your phone because you've got to get it out there. You put your phone down, you're moving on to the next thing, and then you get back, you look at, you know, you go through on a match day, what have we got, over 1,000 notifications, are you just swiping through and you're just trying to see what the comments are.
It's always fun going back and sitting back and sifting through those notifications. There's always a few fun ones in there, but I've been there before, but a few times there's a couple of moments like that, and it is a bit of a mad time in our line of work when you have to tweet and all of a sudden it's, you know, everything's kicking off. So yeah, no, I totally get it. It's all in good fun though.
Ben Hoagland, this is probably one for, well, let's, Ben, email me again next week or send me a tweet. Player by player, What is the percentage likelihood that they will be sold in the summer, and who is the closest to 100%? I like that. We haven't got loads of time to go through the squad. Maybe that's one for next week. Should we do that next week? That
sounds good to me.
Okay, cheers, Ben. Rob Cartwright says, have Manchester City given agreement to Tommy Doyle playing on Saturday, or do we need to make his move permanent this week?
Yeah, that's neither of those things are going to happen. He won't be playing, unfortunately.
Can you imagine? Yeah, you play Doyle. Doyle gets a double and costs him the title, and then we get him for 4.3 million.
They're like, yeah, go on, lads, he'll be fine. Just play him. We're Man City, just play him. It's fine. Oh, all of a sudden, he scores a hat trick at the Etihad, and Man City lose. It's not going to happen. He won't be playing, unfortunately. Well, he will be a Wolves player. 4.3 million, 50% sell on in Man City's favour, obviously, and which is a brilliant business, regardless of the salon, it's excellent. So, he will be Wolves player going forward, but that will not be he will not be playing, unfortunately, against City. So, I'm right in thinking he didn't play at all, did he, against Luke? Didn't come off the bench either, did he? So, he's had a quiet couple of weeks, Tommy Doyle, unfortunately.
He has indeed. Andrew Hill says, what's more preferable, moose claw or camel toe?
I don't know, mate. I couldn't be dragged into these kind of scenarios. I think Judah's got a lot more sort of experience in that department. What do you say, my friend?
I prefer boobs. Traore.
Terrible.
Right, let's have a look. See, Bromley says, it's been another stressful season. Liam deserves a bit of downtime. At least he's not ended up in hospital like last season. Were you in hospital last season, Liam?
Steve, thank you so much for saying that. That's very kind of you. I am pleased that I was abroad on a holiday and not in hospital. It was April as well. I think it was mid-April. It was around the similar time, and missed two games. I think it was two home games, Chelsea and Brentford at home, I think it was. The one when Nunes scored that brilliant winner, was it against Chelsea?
Oh, yeah, across goal, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and I was on death's door, bless me. But
I wouldn't have known, but you sent a picture of an IV drip that you were looking at the hospital, bless you, didn't you?
I've got no idea what you're talking about.
I mean, there's begging and there's a beg, and that's
no, coming from you, master beg.
Brilliant, master beg. Super Grand says, who is your player of the season? Has it changed? And when we both said Mario Lemina, we wrote an article about it. Of course, this is all fluid. Would you still say Mario Lemina is your number one?
Yeah, it definitely is fluid, by the way, because I think I probably would concede on Cunha being above Neto.
I'm going to say Cunha's got to be close, if not number one now, I think.
He's got to be close, isn't he? So I think I would change my five, not the five themselves, but the order of the five. But I would still have Lamina top for me. I think Lamina's still been so good this season.
I think that Lamina's probably just ahead of Cunha at this moment in time. However, if Cunha has a couple of good goals, two out of three good performances, then I can see him nicking it. It'll be interesting because I think they're asking for votes pretty soon, if not already. Wolves,
I think they're doing it now, actually. Yesterday. Yeah.
I miss our Play the Season Awards nights, by the way, the proper ones. Used to go to Telford, didn't we? The conference centre. It used to be a...
That was way before my time as well. So I would love it if they could bring this back, because I'd be really down to go to that. Can we have a word with the Max Peach? See the Wolves Peach listen to this and see if they can sort it out?
Very special performance from a Wolves legend who's now, can you remember, a certain one?
I wasn't there, mate. I don't know.
Musical interlude.
Oh, it was Robert Plant, wasn't it?
Yeah, Planty was there. Fantastic. You'd like that.
I still need to chat to him.
Planty. Spears weak at the knees.
In fact, the Wolves people listen to this. Can you just organise that as well? I'll bring a vinyl.
Planty's son got back to you, has he?
Well, I didn't message, I only followed. Haven't heard a word back. There's no follow. There's not been a follow back. So we'll see how that goes.
But Ashley says, Nathan, do I need to resubmit my question? Let me have a look on your profile very quickly. Let's have a look, Ashley. Oh, yeah, here they are. Two questions. Haven't screened these. Let's have a look. Has anyone considered VAR has not only had a negative impact on the game, but has also impacted injured players? The stop-starting of games and players sometimes standing around for minutes on end can't help. Good question, actually, and fair point, Ashley.
Yeah, I obviously have got no data to support that. I'm not a scientist. I don't work in sports science. But based purely off the really where the, I suppose the nuance of the question, what exactly what you're asking is, because you're sort of implying that that does make an impact. It seems to me like it makes sense that it does make an impact. You know, these players, you have to understand the speed that these players play at in Premier League football, and how much athleticism it takes to actually play in the top flight. And then you've got, you know, even if it's 5 minutes and all of a sudden you've just stood around not doing anything, and then you've got to expect it to go again at 100%, bang, 100 miles an hour, go. I completely understand where the question comes from, because to me it seems like it could have an impact, but obviously without the data to back it up, it's difficult for me to confirm it, but I can understand why you would ask it.
The other question was, does Tommy Doyle have a sell-on clause if Manchester City wants Wolves sign him?
Once Wolves sign him, yes.
So 50. When Wolves sign Tommy Doyle, if he's sold again, do Manchester City get a percentage of that profit?
They do. They get 50% of that profit.
50, yes. Just double checking that. Andy Ching says, do we have a £1 million promotion clause in the Connor Cody deal? Of course, Connor Cody back into the Premier League. Another promotion for him. He will be in the Premier League if he stays with Leicester, of course, next season. So do Wolves reap any benefits from that?
Would you like the short answer or the long answer?
Long answer, please.
No. No. I double checked it out again. There's no other money coming in from Connor Cody. But I'm trying to remember the exact figure it was. It was about $8.5 million, I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was
when he was sold,
like, yeah.
Which was already very good business, because it was about half that for Everton's buy option, which they didn't take up. So it was already pretty good business from a Wolves point of view. But no, they won't be getting any more money from the Cody sale.
Okay. Let's go to one of our beautiful sponsors, kettleandtoastman.co.uk. Do you know that there's not just kettles and there's not just toasters that these people sell? They sell everything. Any kind of electrical equipment that you could want, it is there. And I've got a couple here. One, well, both for you, actually. That'll be very, very useful. And I tell you what, we shall give them away in the old guessing game later on when we preview the game against Manchester City. Are you ready?
You'll
like this, Kino. How do you fancy a Karman C900 infrared heated seat massager for your car?
Oh, mate, that sounds unbelievable.
It sounds awesome.
That sounds class, to be fair.
Infrared heated seat massager. So you just put it on your car seat. There's a little remote control. You press need, and there you go. You've got a little massage, a little lumbar support, a little bit of heat in there. How much? I mean, okay, it's pricey, but it's worth it. Go on.
I'll have to go high because I got it wrong last time on the poly. So, £8 million. No.
Stop it.
That's going to be a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good. But it's good.
Two
Five
grand.
Massage modes.
£2,000.
Less.
It's not going to be any less than a 1,500.
Less.
Bloody hell. Grand?
Less.
825.
Less.
Oh my god, he jumped straight in. 7.
Less.
4.
Less.
Oh my word. Less than 4. I thought I was going to beat you to that one then. 225.
Less.
Oh my word. 163.
Half it.
No. I can't half 163. I don't know what that is.
Come on, give me a guess.
62.
Half it.
Mate, no chance. I've come down from £2,000 here.
That's what you said when you were negotiating your salary at the Express and Star.
£28.
No. Less.
No. Oh, no, he's done me again. £15.50.
15 quid.
15 quid?
15 squid. How good's that?
That's brilliant.
15 squid. I can't believe it myself. So we'll give away that, and we'll give away something else that, again, I've talked to you about this many times, and I don't think you've changed it. How much do you think a nose trimmer is?
Oh. Wait, when you say you've talked to me about it many times, what does that mean to mean?
Well, you know, there's a few little hairs creeping out, and I think you just need to look after yourself a little bit more.
That's bang out of order. How much is a nose trimmer? I don't know. 100 quid?
Fiver.
Fiver?
Fiver. You can get a heated seat. I tell you what, we'll go on to the game now. But I'm going to give away a heated seat, a nose trimmer, and a home shirt for this season, all in the prize, because it's just incredible. It's an incredible bundle.
That is one hell of a bundle.
Oh, my good God. Right, Manchester City away. Now, talking to Gary O'Neill, and I asked him a very interesting question. I said about asked him about mentality of his players after the game, which they got over the line, and a lot of people saying, of course, I think it's Manchester City, they're going to get battered. And I said to him, like, you know, your players will probably relish this kind of a game, won't they? And he kind of had a wry smile and said they will really look forward to it. Says there's nothing to lose, and he says that he's called his team the Disruptors this season, which was a great line. He said he's talked to them all season about them upsetting the apple cart, and that these guys will fancy going there and really putting the cat amongst the pigeons. And to be honest, speaking and hearing about, I watched the Forest game on Sunday against Manchester City, and they go back to the studio and they're talking about the title running, and they all were discussing about, oh, when could Manchester City slip up? And they're saying, most of them said, well, Spurs away is probably the game, but they expect them to win every single game, fair enough. Keane said that Fulham away is a difficult game. Every single person went way over, didn't even discuss Wolves at all, not even in the slightest. And that is when Wolverhampton Wanderers are at their most dangerous. I promise you that there will be a twist in the tail. And on Saturday, I'm not saying what the final result will be. I'm not saying that Manchester won't win the game. But there will be a sweaty moment in this game, early on in this game, or during this game, where Manchester City aren't just running away with this. I guarantee you. And Gary O'Neill, you could just tell in his response that he fancies doing something in this game. And with the likes of Cunha and the likes of Hwang back together, starting games, they're always going to have a chance. Do not write off Wolves in this game. I'm actually really excited about this one, Liam.
I love your enthusiasm, because I'm also right up for this game, especially when I've missed a couple and I want to get back into it. Last three games of the season, I'm ready to go.
Get amongst it.
Now, who are expected to win the game? Man City.
Of course.
Who are we going to predict to win the game? It's going to be Manchester City.
Of course.
However, who do Man City think they're going to roll over on Saturday? They think they're going to roll Wolves over on Saturday.
They're looking at... people are talking about... I mean, there's a 6 or 7 goal difference between them and Arsenal. They're looking at putting a cricket... people think they could put a cricket score up against Wolves.
Yeah, completely agree. They're looking at who Arsenal are playing more than who they're playing. Mm-hmm. They think they're going to walk right through Wolves, no questions asked. Maybe in a week's time we'll be talking about Wolves losing 6-0, but I find that very hard to believe. Agreed. I think this is a Wolves team that, now with a few players back from injuries, as you mentioned previously in the podcast, and a bit stronger, and having beaten this Man City team already this season.
I'm going to say they've lost 3 games this season. I'm sure one of them was against Wolves.
Oh yeah, funny enough that, isn't it? And Wolves didn't have it all their own way as well, because they were 1-0 up and it went to 1-1, and Wolves still went and won that game. So look, Wolves can fight when there's a bit of adversity in front of them as well. Now, as I say, is it a really difficult place to go? Absolutely. Are they an absolutely fabulous team? Completely, absolutely, 100%. Does it mean Wolves can't go there and win the game, let alone get a result? Definitely not. Wolves are more than good enough to go there and win. They've done it in the past. They've got the players to go and do it now. It's going to take a massive effort, a monumental tactical and physical effort from the players to go out there and do it. But Wolves are more than capable of doing it. And that's what makes it exciting for Wolves. Now, look, the European dream is done for this season. Wolves don't have, on paper, anything to play for. But the pressure's off. You can look at it the other way. The pressure's off. What have Wolves got to fear? You turn up.
They're dangerous.
Wolves, and exactly how you've said, Wolves are dangerous when people write them off. And Wolves are the underdog, and people completely throw them by the wayside. That's when Wolves are at their best, quite often. And I just, same as you, just got this feeling. And whether they get the result or not is another thing.
Correct.
But I've just got this feeling that it's going to be a difficult afternoon for Man City, and that Wolves will have their big moments in this game, and it's up to them to take them and then get the result. Doesn't mean it'll happen, but it does mean, in my opinion, that there's going to be a really good game of football to watch, and hopefully some squeaky bums in an already pretty silent stadium.
Absolutely. No offense, Man City. Love it. I love it. No, and look, obviously some special memories of some results, especially, you know, I can still remember that Traore double after the Besiktas game when they went there and pulled off one of the results. I think one of the best results I think I've ever watched Wolves play. They were absolutely superb. And Traore, my goodness, it was. And there's another Traore playing, of course, we expect at on Saturday as well. It's 5:30 kickoff, I believe.
It is indeed.
5:30 kickoff. look, Manchester City are pretty much at full strength, bar the goalkeeper. I think Ortega will probably play. I don't think Edison. I think Edison's got a longish term problem. It doesn't look great. But apart from that, I know Phil Foden missed out last time. Haaland's on the bench, so he's going to be back. So, you know, you're pretty much playing a full strength Manchester City. But I genuinely think something will go on in this game, whether it's Wolves score first or, you know, or it's level going deep into the second half. I just feel that they will give a lot of those people who have already written them off something to fear. And I don't know. There's just a little feeling. I'm glad that we've both got it. Both got that little feeling going into this game. Saying that in terms of team selection, Liam, would you say that it will be, he said he's hoping, and we'll hear from Gary on Friday, you know, Pedro Neto might have a chance. And there's no way any million years is going in to start this game. But I think from what he's suggesting, he's more likely to be available from the bench against Crystal Palace. And that's the game that he wants. He wants a lot of his players, I think, to be back for that game. Bellegarde maybe might be closer, potentially. Santiago Bueno, there's going to be probably a late fitness test for him. Craig Dawson out for the rest of the season. But in terms of starters, do you feel like he will go with that back, well, that starting 11 that faced Luton Town, or do you think there might be some changes to that?
Considering, obviously, the fact that Tommy Doyle won't be available, mm-hmm. and other players that are a few question marks over, I think it'll be an unchanged 11.
Yeah,
I really do. So that would be Sarr in goal, Semedo, Kilman, Totti, Gomez as a three. Obviously, I know Semedo and mm-hmm. Doc sort of interchanged, but then Doherty and Aitnori as the wing backs. João Gomez, Mayo Lamina, Boubacar Traore in midfield, Cunha and Huang leading the line. Or I suppose Cunha would be sort of slightly behind, wouldn't he? But
kind of nice to name an unchanged side, to be honest. I mean, I can't remember the last time would have been, but a bit of continuity. The players have got through that Luton test. They've got that win. No one wanted to go, you know, into the last couple of games of the season searching for the first win in 9, 10, 11 games and finish the season like that. They've got that win now. Gary Neil said it's going to be very difficult for them to finish in the top 10, and it is. And they're probably going to have to beat a Liverpool or a Manchester City, as well as a Crystal Palace, if they're going to be able to do that. But they'll have a good go doing it, I tell you that. They're not just going to lay over and sit back for 85 minutes and try and get a 0-0. Gary O'Neill will probably know that, realistically, if they're going to get something in this game, they need to score a couple of goals.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I said this already on the in the last answer, that I think this game's always got the potential to be, you know, an absolute drub and you lose 5-6-0 because Man City are that good. Well, I just, and maybe in a week's time we'll be on the podcast and we'll be laughing about it because I've said this and we got it completely wrong and it was exactly the drubbing that some people expect. But I just can't see that happening with this Wolves team going to this stage of the season, going to Man City, when as good as they are, they're going to be nervous. They have to win the game. They cannot drop points because Arsenal are on a roll at the moment. It'd be difficult to see them dropping any points. So yeah, I just find it a remarkable opportunity for Wolves to be the disruptors, as Gary described them. And if they're going to do it, they're going to have to score goals. But as you've said, you know, they've got Cunha, they've got Huang, they've got Aitnori, they've got players back playing that are more than good enough to go there and get a result. It's especially under light, well, it won't be light, or dark rather, when the game kicks off, but later in the game under the lights at the Etihad, it's just got, yeah, it's got something about it, this game. I can sense it already. And the fans will, you know, the travelling fans, not the home fans, definitely, but the travelling fans will be at their best, making all the noise. And if Wolves can have a good start, get an early goal, or just go 1-0 up in general in the game, whenever it might be, the atmosphere will be tense from a home point of view, but bouncing in that away end, and that will just give Wolves all the energy they need to hopefully see it through.
Bouncing in that press box as well, I tell you that.
Absolutely.
Right, so, scores on the doors. I'll go first. I'll then give the floor to you, and of course the Magic 8-Ball. So, if you guess Liam's prediction correct, if you retweet it, then, just retweet it, and then if Liam gets it correct, then we will give away a nose trimmer. We will give away a heated car seat, and we shall give away a home shirt. I'm going to say that Wolves equip themselves very, very well. It is nervous. It is 1-1 heading late into the game. Manchester City just nick it, but they get an almighty scare. I'm going to say Manchester City 2, Wolverhampton Wanderers 1.
So as I alluded to already, even though we've given this nice run-up to the score prediction, that we're probably both going to predict a Man City win. And I'm going to do the same, but same as you, I think it'd be very tight. I don't even remember. I can't remember. Was it a couple seasons ago? And Jimenez got himself sent off ridiculously. And Wolves were
you
really good.
You also reported them, were you, a couple of seasons ago?
Don't you start.
New supporter.
Shut up.
Graduating.
Shut your mouth. And Wolves were really good that day. And then they got a dodgy penalty, Man City, and 1-1 nearly hit Martino sort of in the armpit. And it got given as a handball.
Oh, yes.
And Wolves lost 1-0 with 10 men. I think it'll be that sort of dogged performance, but the same scoreline. Man City win 1-0, and it'll be really tight.
Okay. So the Magic 8 Ball said don't count on it when asking for the Bournemouth when we went for a Bournemouth win, and it was correct. So the Magic 8 Ball has got 3 out of 4 correct. So I guess we've got to ask it, it's fair to ask it, will Manchester City win, right?
I think you have to. I think that's got to be the answer.
Will Manchester City beat Wolves on Saturday evening? Come on, for once, be negative in the right way. Will Manchester City beat Wolves? What's it say? Outlook good. Okay.
Sounds like we might be right
ball.
Again.
Well, you know, Magic 8 Ball, he knows its stuff. Keno, it's been a pleasure to have you back on the show. I'm glad you had a nice time. I'm looking forward to see you in person, to see that bronzed Adonis. Slightly whiter than white, or a different shade, maybe a cream shade of white.
I think sort of eggshell white, I think.
Eggshell. I love it. Eggshell, whipped cream white.
Well, if you're lucky.
You love to see it. From me, from Keane, have a great weekend. Fingers crossed, 1 or 3 points on Saturday. From me, from the boy wonder, have a great weekend. Take care. Bye-bye. Retreat, because we're on the attack. The strength of the wolf is the strength of the pack. We're Wolverhampton, we're on our way back.